I'm here today with the Plan A Podcast. My name is Patrick Roenhaus, and my guest today is Peter Rojas of GDGT. How you doing, Peter?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for letting me come and interview you. It's pretty nice out here in New York today with its great snow.
Yeah, it's a little brutal out there today.
So, you've been covering tech news for the past, like, 6 years now? Seven?
Actually, I started as an editor at Red Herring in 1999, so 10 years.
Wow. What's your view on, like, how technology's changed in the last 10 years?
Well, technology or gadgets in particular, because they're kind of two answers that are similar, but
the toys versus the big boys.
Well, I think that gadgets have changed a lot in just the past 5 or 6 years, but I think technology in general is, I mean, obviously there's no way other way to describe what's going on with technology than just complete revolution in the past, say, 15 years, really, since the web started in 93. And I think that what's happened is that technology has really become, just in general, something that people, the average person, is so much more aware of than they used to be. And that I think the average person sees playing a very direct role in the way that they live their life. And I think that you know, the pace of technological change is so fast now that it is a little destabilizing. And we, you know, people had a sense of it being kind of destabilizing even 20 or 30 years ago. Or really, you know, post-World War II or whatever. But I think that technology was always seen as something that sort of was a little bit more in the background, or when it changed, it would happen like a big change, but it would take years for us to absorb it. Like television, for example, which is a big change. But it took, you know, it really took a while for it to completely seep into our culture and change our society. And we're seeing things now change the way we live almost in real time, where you see something like, you know, social networking really changing the way we live and just, you know, communicate and connect with each other in really just 2 or 3 years. And so, you know, from that perspective, I think technology is really, just drastically changing our lives. And just in the past few years, it's really, I think, become a much bigger and greater part of the way people, sort of define themselves and the way that people connect with other people. And I think that it's something that people see as being a bigger part of how their lives are going to change in the future than they would have before. I think with respect to gadgets, I think that what's happened really just the past 5 or 6 years is that technology has become, gadgets have become much more personal. And so the number of gadgets that the average person has in their life has gone up considerably. And so I think, whereas, say, 15 years ago, the average person might have a Walkman and then a watch or something like that. I think now most people, at least middle-class people in the developed world, have, they have a digital camera, and they have an iPod, and they have a laptop, and they have, they might have a game console, and, you know, they have a lot more gear than they would have before, and you carry a lot more of it than you used to. And I think, you know, we kind of take it for granted now, but the idea that you carry just sort of a little computer around with you all the time, it's a big deal. I mean, it's very, like, science, like, kind of sci-fi stuff. And that's really a change that's happened just in the past few years. It's been very, we forget that, you know, most of us didn't carry around cell phones 7, 8 years ago. And it was still seen as kind of a luxury for most of us. I remember, it was a big deal for me when I got my first cell phone. That was only 8 years ago. 8 years is really nothing, but I think in terms of the way we live our lives, it's really a pretty quick change in a lot of things for us to absorb.
So with you started 10 years ago now with covering technology. Did you always want to do that, or like what were your your pursuits when you were younger?
Well, I was always kind of interested in technology and computers and things like that, just through my dad, who was kind of an early adopter, and we had computers in the house from a pretty early age. But I wasn't necessarily someone who, you know, you meet people, or you find people who kind of take to a computer and they like become programmers and all. I wasn't really like that. I mean, I was good, but I wasn't someone who kind of had sort of like a natural sort of flair for doing computing and programming and that kind of stuff. I mean, I liked it, but I kind of liked it more as like gaming, and, you know, I liked it more as a sort of a tool of distraction than as something to actually be productive with. So I originally thought I'd be an academic, and I have a master's degree in critical theory, which is like kind of a shoot of post-structuralism, I guess, which is sort of a strain of literary criticism. And I actually thought I would get a PhD and become like a professor somewhere or something like that. So that was what I, for a long time, I thought that was what I was going to be.
So what was the event that, you know, sidetracked that, just a wonder?
I think it wasn't necessarily, it was kind of like a series of things. It was going to grad school and getting a master's degree and realizing that I didn't want to go on and get a PhD. I didn't want to spend the rest of my life as an academic. But I didn't necessarily know what I wanted to do instead. And I worked in advertising for a little while and was really bad at it. I worked as a media planner for Hal Reiney. I worked on the Saturn Automotive account. And I was pretty bad at it, and I think I was probably on the road to getting fired when I just decided to quit and see if I could find another job. And this was in early 1999 in San Francisco. I was living there, and everything was kind of, you know, you kind of saw what was going on with like the dot-com boom, and I felt very much on the outside of that. I didn't really feel part of it. I had some friends who were web designers and a handful who worked for different companies, but all at really low levels. I mean, it was like, you know, people, it wasn't anything, I mean, I didn't know people who were starting companies or were, you know, working at a high level in the technology industry or anything like that. So I was very much on the periphery of all that, and I just sort of randomly got a job at Red Herring as an editor there, and I didn't really have much, I mean, I interned at a magazine at college, but I didn't really have a ton of journalism experience, and I thought I was a pretty decent writer, but I definitely had never been a reporter like that before, and so it was a pretty steep learning curve for me. But I found that I was pretty good at it, and I liked it, and I got to work with people like Om Malik, from GigaOm, mm-hmm. and Jason Pond, who's now at Technology Review, and those guys were, and like Dean Takahashi, who's like an amazing video game journalist. He used to be at the Wall Street Journal, and then the Mercury News, and now VentureBeat. And, these were guys that, like, kind of taught me, like, how to be a better technology writer. And I got to work with some of the best people in the industry. And I think the fact that, you know, these guys are all sort of, you know, still big names kind of says, it's kind of a testament to how great they were then and how good they are now. And so that was sort of something that I just decided. I kind of randomly found something I was good at and that I liked. And if anything, it was kind of nice to be, you know, 24, 25, and kind of thinking, wow, like I found something I can do for maybe the rest of my life. And so it was kind of nice.
That's very cool. With the evolution of technology, gadgets and whatnot, what are currently some of your favorite little toys and gizmos that you've gotten to play with or you personally own?
I get to play with a lot of stuff, though. You know, since I'm not blogging day-to-day anymore, I don't play with as much of it as I used to. I suspect with GVGT that once we launch, that number will increase again. But lately, a few things I've liked are the G1, I guess people call it the Google phone, first one with Android, which actually is my day-to-day phone, and I like quite a bit.
Are you using the Dev Unlocked one, or are you using
the regular T-Mobile one.
Okay.
I got one pretty early on, and I didn't want to wait for the unlocked version, and I like that. It's got its flaws, but I think for me, I mean, I can put up with a lot. I mean, as long as you get a little bit of power to do a little bit extra with it, and I kind of like the flexibility and like the openness of it. What else have I been playing with lately that I've liked? Really new or
personal favorites that might be a few years old that you still use today, or you know, something that you've seen recently that you're like, daddy like.
I'm trying to think what else I've been like really lusting after. I mean, I still really want to buy a netbook. I've been looking at maybe buying an MSI Wind and putting Hackintosh on it, which I think would be pretty cool. I've been actually trying to toy with putting Nitroid, which is the Android for Nokia's N800 series. So I have an N810, and I've been thinking about putting Nitroid on there.
Do you have the WiMAX version, or do you have the...
No, actually the WiMAX version is already end of life.
I know.
Basically discontinued it. And since there's no WiMAX here, in New York didn't really seem worth it for me. I mean, maybe you were able to get some use out of it in Baltimore.
That's very true.
It's something that I've been kind of toying with. I like the idea of doing little like weekend projects like that. Unfortunately, my time is so constrained right now that it's hard for me to find, you know, like 3 or 4 hours to sit around and do something like that. What else have I been playing with? The Xbox 360 actually is something that I think has gotten consistently better over time, which is kind of weird.
And I would agree with that. Like when the Xbox first came out, I was like, I'm not buying this. They killed the Dreamcast. Look at the controller. You can see it.
Yep.
And like
Peter Moore had been come from Sega.
Yeah. And with Nexi now, you know, how that's just like, my friend has an Xbox and I let him use my Netflix account to get it. And he just tells me what he wants and I, you know, add to my queue list. It's just really impressive. And I've been like being with my friends in Brooklyn right now while staying here.
Yeah.
Is just, I'm like, I really want to get an Xbox now.
Yeah, it's. I think that Microsoft, I mean, it's the one Microsoft product that I think everyone likes, except for like the diehard Sony guys.
What about the Zoom?
Well, people don't really, I mean, I do like the Zoom, but I don't think that there's a lot of widespread like for the, you know, love for the Zoom. Mm-hmm. I think the Xbox is like the one thing that people really like. And they've consistently made it actually a better product. I mean, with like the new, the user experience is something that they did really well, and the thing that's funny about it is, and I talked about this on the podcast with Ryan, do you hear any stories about it like breaking a console or people having problems with it or nothing?
No.
And that is that is just like a really underappreciated sort of technological accomplishment in and of itself, that you could completely overhaul and push that out over the network to everybody's console of all the, you know, and there are all these different SKUs and everything for the console, and no one's complained about their console breaking that I know. I mean, I'm sure there's got to be somebody out there who had a problem, but it's just kind of weird. I mean, you don't even hear about this with even when Apple does an update to OS X. You always hear about somebody's having some small problem, right? Like the Wi-Fi stopped working on their laptop or whatever.
Or like the fans start blowing
forever. So it's just kind of interesting that they were able to pull that off. But even just like the fact that they keep adding, you know, access to new services. I mean, like the Netflix stuff. Little things like just buying, you know, high def shows. I mean, I've been buying episodes of Battlestar Galactica, trying to get caught up, and it works. I mean, it takes 6 hours or whatever to download the episode because it's 1.9 gigabytes, but it works, and the experience is pretty good. And I think that they've done a pretty admirable job there, and I think they, you know, they get a lot of credit for it. But I think that there's Microsoft probably deserves a little, you know, extra credit for having done something, considering the negative reputation they have for so many other things that they tried to accomplish.
Yeah, all the foobar that comes out of them. And look with also Windows 7.
Well, people are really, a lot of acclaim for Windows 7. There's a lot of positivity, anticipation, I guess, around, you know, Windows 7, and people are having good experiences with it, and you know, it runs well on netbooks and things like that, and so I think that's it's just interesting to sort of see, Microsoft maybe turning things around. I mean, it is frustrating to see things that not to get too far off, you know, your original question, but to see them sort of lagging on things that they should have improved a long time ago, like Windows Mobile, which there's no excuse, right? There's no excuse for why it's so bad. It's not even like the third best.
That's the less. I think Windows Mobile, personally, is me. Is Old Yellow that should have been taken out before the rabies started?
Well, I think that the problem is that Microsoft approached it strategic. They had some strategic objectives they wanted to accomplish with the OS, and a lot of them, and basically that objective was to break RIM's, basically the monopoly they had on mobile push email with their RIM's Exchange server integration. And so that was like a big objective. Creating something that consumers cared about, something like that wasn't really important. They were really focusing on like the enterprise user and about creating something that basically like getting push email, nailing push email so that enterprise users wouldn't, so that enterprise customers would feel like it was a good alternative to RIM. And since if Microsoft wasn't charging for the push email integration, then they have like a small advantage over RIM. And it took them even a few years to get push email into Windows Mobile. So they were thinking about the strategic objective and they weren't really thinking holistically about the whole experience. But and when they were, with things like Windows, you know, Mobile 7 and Photon and all that, they really pushed that stuff so far back and kept delaying it that it really, you know, they really put themselves into a, kind of painted themselves into a corner with the market.
And so to reel it back a little bit, you know, to get back to the original question, so you like the G1,
yeah.
You like the Xbox 360
yeah.
with its update recently with Nexi.
Yeah, but I even liked it before too.
Okay. And what's a third gadget that you've been really liking lately?
A third one that I've been really liking lately, that I've been I'm trying to think of something I've been using a lot, probably the D90. Maybe Ryan said that to you, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It just takes phenomenal photos, and I've been using that. You know, I have a 6-month-old at home, and it's just nice to be able to take really great shots with that and be able to shoot like the high def video and all that. And it's one of those things that, along with the D80, which I have as well. I have the D90 on loaner, which they just actually emailed me asking for it back. But the D80, the both make it's pretty easy to get decent shots, and you can take really nice photos with a minimal amount of hassle, which is something that I definitely really appreciate. Because as much as I love doing photography, like I'm not trying to get like a perfect shot. I'm not, you know, I don't have the time to sort of fiddle and try to get everything just right in terms of the settings. I really want something that's going to approximate a really good shot, as, you know, as easily as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they've done a pretty good job with both cameras in doing that.
With talking about cameras, real quick.
Yeah.
What's your view on the I think the camera that makes everyone pine, the Red One and the future Red Scarlet?
Well, I think I think it's important to keep in mind those aren't really consumer cameras. I mean, those are really aimed at people that want to be able to take to basically shoot high definition, you know, digital films.
I mean, just to interject there real quick, they are priced at a price range that would be, when the Scarlett comes out, just for the body alone, $3,000, which is equivalent, you would say, like something like a more expensive, you know, like Sony or Canon camera.
But those aren't consumer cameras. What I'm saying.
Well, they would be considered, like, I would think, prosumer market.
$3,000. I mean, I'm saying, but I mean, I think that they are really trying to aim at people who want to create, who are really going to be shooting basically professional video. I'm not saying they're going to be shooting like feature films, but like, you know, it's aimed at people that are going to be shooting video for like their web productions and maybe even some basic TV stuff. But I don't think that it's really. I think when you're getting into that range, there are very few. Consumers are gonna buy a camera like that for shooting, you know, video of their kid's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean.
Okay.
So I mean that is, those cameras are still in the sub, mainly in the under $800 range.
Okay. Well, talking about kids' birthdays and whatnot.
Yeah.
You're a new father.
Yeah.
What's one of the things that you look at like down the road with your own son being born in this post computer revolution? Like, are there kind of things when you look at him and you realize that, wow, he's going to have, like, such a different life that you had growing up? Because you were born on the cusp of when it just started.
Yeah.
Like, there were a couple years that even I remember before I had a computer. But he's going to be born in a time where he's going to have a computer, he's probably going to have a cell phone, he's going to have a media player.
I'm actually probably not going to let him have a cell phone for a little while. I don't necessarily think, I don't necessarily think that kids need to have, you know, they need. I don't think you necessarily need to get kids started right away on, you know, using computers and technology. Look, I didn't really start using a computer until I was older, and I didn't have a cell phone until I was, you know, 24 or something like that. So, and it doesn't, you know, hasn't really hindered my ability to do my job. And I also think that it's important for kids to, you know, to make sure that they grow up, that they read books. And that, you know, stuff like that, and be able to like play outside, and you know, I'm not necessarily gonna have him like, you know, on the Xbox when he's like, you know, 4 or 5 years old or anything like that.
But it is still quite a different life.
It's totally it is totally different, and I think that you know, technology is gonna be it's gonna permeate his life in a way that it didn't with mine, because I think you know, that computing is so much more. Pervasive and omnipresent in a way that it wasn't. I mean, you know, I was lucky enough to grow up with a computer in the home probably starting at like age 6 or 7 maybe. And, you know, but that was like one like incredibly underpowered machine.
Do you mind if I ask what that was?
I think it was an Atari 400.
Very nice.
And then my dad got the 800 pretty soon after that when the 800 came out. You know, and so a lot of the stuff will seem very kind of like invisible, you know, to him in a way that it wouldn't for me. And but you know, there are all sorts of technologies that I took, you know, that we took for granted growing up that, you know, like our grandparents did, you know, like telephone and TV and VCR and, you know, cable and all. So every generation, you know, I think the difference is really the main. It's a lot about the pace, you know, technology really colors the way that we understand the world and the way we relate to the world and the way that we even understand ourselves. And I think, you know, his notions of privacy are going to be really different than the ones that we had growing up. I mean, I don't know how old you are, but...
I'm 24 myself.
So you're just like a little bit younger than me, but, you know, he's going to grow up in a world where, like, pictures of him have been on the internet since the day he was born, you know, and you know, it used to be that, you know, that there was sort of a barrier between your life and the rest of the world, whether you wanted to be there or not. Mm-hmm. And I think that barrier won't exist, and it will seem kind of it will be difficult for him to probably understand a world without the internet. Just in the same way that I think it's hard for us to probably understand, to really intuitively understand a world like before the telephone, before you could just call people. I even have trouble trying to remember what it's like before cell phones, when you're like, you know, how...
You have to run to a payphone and make a call.
Yeah, it's like, what did we do for so many years? Mm-hmm. You know, without, like, how did you make plans with people? Or, you know, if someone was late, you just stood around and waited for them or something. So it's kind of funny how even, you know, we take things for granted. I also think that, and this is something I actually think might turn out to be a negative, is that one of the things I think as you grow up and you change is that you have to sometimes be free to kind of redefine yourself. And I don't know how philosophical you want to get in the podcast, but you know, I think it's one thing that was...
This is a highbrow podcast.
Yeah, it's a highbrow podcast. I think it's important for people to be able to change and try out different identities and roles in life and things like that. And I think that if you have a sort of a fixed record of your life that is hard to escape from, it's hard to reinvent yourself. And I don't mean it's like dramatic, like complete, like change your name, move to a new city thing, but you know, when you're a kid, you try on different roles, right? You try, you know, are you more of a jock or more of a nerd or more, you know what I mean? Like
you go through that golf phase where you take a pen and paint your name.
Exactly. And I think that if you, you know, have this world where you're, you know, people, we don't often think about it, but like the people that you surround yourself with, their expectations of you kind of do, you know, do have an impact on you. And I think that if you have a group of people that are expecting you to be a certain person in a certain way, that it's very hard to break free of, but kind of change that and break free of that. And I kind of wonder, you know, how that'll impact things. Just in the same way that people being able to move away from a small village and move to cities, you know, that anonymity, that extra anonymity that you had in the city actually helped people to you know, do interesting new things, to try out, you know, to experiment and to you know, whether it's just, you know, taking risks and doing new companies or taking risks and creating new kinds of culture or music or art or whatever, you know.
Someone will always find you from your old high school days on Facebook.
Yeah, and I think that if you kind of feel like that group of people are always going to be watching you and judging you and wondering, you know, watching what you do, I think it's kind of a bad thing, you know. I think it's important for kids to be able to, you know,
let go of the emo and heap song goes.
Yeah, I think that was, you know, important for me. It's like, when I got into, you know, more and more into technology after I became, you know, a journalist, I think that it was, you know, it was good. I mean, I was able to sort of, you know, move into something and try that out and see whether it was the right thing for me, and it turned out to be.
That's good.
So, I don't know. I mean, it might be something that 10 years from now, it just doesn't, it's a question that doesn't even make sense, just in the same way that, you know, I think a lot of, you know, teenagers don't really think about issues, like, don't even think issues of privacy are, you know, they don't even understand the question, right? Because it's like, the notions of privacy have changed so much.
It's like there is no curtain anymore for just like a little bit of quiet second time. There's always that MySpace photo pose.
Yeah, and you know, and just in the same way that I think, you know, there are people who lament the fact that the ways that people, you know, families spent their time changed after television. And the fact that, you know, neighborhoods changed after air conditioning and people stopped hanging out on their porches and interacting with their neighbors. So it's, you know, there are consequences of the stuff. I think that generally the good outweighs the bad. But I think it is really important to think, and that's why I think what you asked is a really good question, is, you know, our lives are going to be different. We should think about it and talk about it, and maybe there are some ways to mitigate some of the negative parts of that.
Hopefully we'll have some, you know, Dr. Strangelove moments and learn to love the bomb on this one.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But I think, you know, generally speaking, I think the good outweighs the bad. And you know, I think one of the things that I kind of am looking forward to with my son is something that, like, I never had as much of an opportunity growing up, is that, you know, he's going to be able to, when he has ideas and he wants to work on things or build things or create things, he's going to be able to do it in ways that, like, I was never able to growing up.
I mean, you have platforms for developers now, like, you know, the Android phone or the Palm Pre with its new web OS,
yeah,
or, you know, the Apple iPhone are prime examples where if he wanted to make an app, he could do it.
Yeah, and I wish that, you know, I think about, you know, if I mean, when I was growing up in the early 80s, a video camera was a huge luxury. And even if you could afford one, the you know, editing wasn't something you were going to be able to do. Even if you owned two VCRs or something like that and you wanted to do some, you know, really just bare bones kind of, you know, editing like that. So I mean, the fact that you can, you know, a kid can just shoot video and, you know, do create their own movies and things like that, I mean, the things that I would have loved to have been able to do. And so I think, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, when he's old enough, which, you know, I don't know, everybody's shooting like his own 3D films or something like that. But my point is, like, you know, he'll have the tools have become so democratized that you can really express your creativity in all sorts of new ways that you couldn't before, even if you wanted to. And I think that is actually a really awesome thing.
That's cool. That's really cool, man. Thanks. Now, for personal taste stuff, being that we like to cover things geek on this podcast,
yeah,
what are some of the things that make you extreme geek? Like, what are your favorite TV shows? Were you a comic book kid? What's your current favorite video games? You know, your top three of both TV and video games.
Okay.
And, any other little things that, you know, make you more than just the average, ordinary, you know, mortal?
Well, in terms of TV, right now, you know, Battlestar, trying to get caught up. I'm like probably four episodes into season four right now, so I still have to get caught up so I can start watching the episodes in real time. It's just been super hard.
I won't spoil anything.
Yeah, don't do not.
It gets good, man.
Yeah,
that's what
I heard. No spoilers. I don't want to know who the fifth Cylon is yet.
I'm not even quite sure about that one myself.
Don't say anything. Okay. So you know, that's actually a show, and my wife is like obsessed with it. She loves Battlestar, and so it's kind of you know, we watched that together. Lost. I'm kind of getting back into Lost. It's kind of funny. It's like, I think I like it more. I think I like want to like it more than I like it. If that makes sense. Like, I actually really love the show, but I'm.
Were you Lost at season two? Lost?
No, I mean, I kind of always held true, and I always gave Ryan a really hard time for not keeping the faith. I want it to be just like a little bit better. You know, I like it, but I feel like it could be just like a tiny bit like more. I don't know. But that's something that I really enjoy, and I'm trying to think what else in terms of shows. I think like The Office, 30 Rock, kind of double whammy is like something that, you know, I really love those shows.
It's kind of self-referential, kind of, you know, takes on life kind of thing.
Yeah, and you know, there's always like, I feel like the people that make those shows are geeks in a way. Like, you kind of see like subtle, you know, things here and there. Like, you know, the episode where on The Office when Jim paired his Bluetooth headset with Dwight, I can't believe I forgot his name. I just watched like the Super Bowl episode, you know, like 2 nights ago, with Dwight's cell phone. Like, I thought it was really funny, you know, and just kind of thinking about, like, I don't know, something like I would do if I had ever thought of, if I was ever clever enough to think of something like that, which apparently I'm not. But, you know, so I think that it's kind of cool that, like, you know, that people who are like have, you know, geeky tendencies, I guess, are starting to like, they're not just working on like sci-fi stuff, they're actually kind of like working on just like more mainstream sitcoms mm-hmm. and fare and stuff like that. So, you know, when they make a reference to like Huffington Post on 30 Rock, I think that's kind of funny. So, I kind of appreciate that. Okay, what other categories did we?
Were you a comic book geek, or did you read sci-fi, or were you rolling a D20?
So I was kind of all of, okay. So I was a little bit of a comic book guy, but not like too hardcore. Like I.
You weren't the superhero comic book guy. You were the, you know, Transmetropolitan or Sandman.
No, I wasn't even that cool. I was right. Like definitely more like Spider-Man. I mean, okay. I was like eight.
Rock on. So, Spider-Man's always good.
Yeah, so I was collecting like Spider-Man comics and like, you know, like G.I. Joe comics and stuff like that, which I was really into. And I guess I'm kind of excited about the movie, but not. It looks like it's probably going to be really bad.
But it looks one of those.
The Transformers movie sucked too. So
how can you argue with the Transformers movie? What is the formula? It's big giant robots that blow a lot of stuff up with lots of explosions.
No, probably. There's got to be a story. Okay, first off, the Transformer comics actually had a story.
That's true. Scorponok was an evil SOB.
But even like the animated TV show had more plot and character development than the movie.
Okay.
I appreciate it for the spectacle, but I think I wanted like more than spectacle. I guess that's why like The Dark Knight is such a good movie, right? And it'll actually have like some depth to it. And I think that, you know, people, it's weird. Like you think like writing is like the so cheap. Mm-hmm. When you think about it, it's like the one thing they would skimp on in movies. So I wasn't super hardcore like a comics guy. I was pretty seriously like a D&D guy.
Perfectly fine.
So I started playing D&D when I was five.
It's perfectly fine.
I think I just learned to read.
Nice.
I made my mom get me the D&D basic module or the kit, you know, for my fifth birthday. And I remember what was really. Hopefully, I'm running out of time with these boring stories.
No. I don't want to take up your time though, because you know.
What was funny about the is, you know, like the. I don't remember this, but in the kit, in the box, they give you like, you know, your dice and then a little crayon. And the idea is you're supposed to like kind of use the crayon to etch kind of like the color of the crayon into the grooves of the numbers of on the die.
So it's your personalized die.
Well, yeah, it's like you've kind of like, you know, modded it so that like the numbers are easier to read.
Mm-hmm.
I did not understand this at 5 years old and just thought I had a crayon, and I think I used it to like mark up all sorts of things on the module or some all the manuals and all that stuff. So I played D&D, but I actually also got into like almost every role-playing game that was Top Secret, Star Frontiers, Twilight 2000, Gamma World, Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. Like I played all of them, and it was really hard to find enough people to play with me. But I do remember for my 10th birthday, I had a Gamma World party, and so I made me and like five of my friends all played Gamma World.
Sir,
yeah,
you've just gotten serious geek creds in my book. You just got yourself 2,000 Kool-Aid points to buy a skateboard here.
Yeah, so you know that was my thing. Like Gamma World, I really liked, mm-hmm. and I would spend. You know, I was kind of a solitary kid, except for when I, you know, I think like a birthday party was like a you couldn't refuse the invitation kind of thing. But mainly, I would actually play the role playing games by myself, or I'd spend a lot of time like. Doing maps and creating character and like, you know, NPG, you know, non-player character, NPC, you know.
You were the ultimate dungeon master.
I was seriously like, I could have, yeah, exactly. I would have been the best dungeon master if I had anyone to play with. So, you know, so I was in that. I was like kind of into video games, like when like the, I had like the Atari 2600 and then like the NES and all that stuff. So it's, you know, into like video games. But video games are like so much cooler than, you know, than role-playing games. A lot easier to get kids to come over to your house to play.
It's like, I got this new Super Mario Bros. 3, made a great movie commercial. Do you remember The Wizard with Fred Savage?
I do remember The Wizard with Fred Savage.
Power Glove, it's so bad.
I know. Such a noble failure. So that was, like, one of my main thing. And I was into, like, you know, sci-fi and you know, like, all this, you know, Star Wars stuff and reading, like, you know, Asimov and that sort of thing. And then there was just, like, lots of just crappy, like, I can't even remember, you know, that stuff. But the one thing that I was really, really, really into kind of as I got a little older, and I guess kind of, like, towards 10 or 11, was Robotech. which is like a had a huge impact on me, because then they just brought it to America in probably like 84, 85, and so I just got obsessed with the show. I actually kept a journal, like a log, in which I would like write down the name and the date of every episode as it aired, and I had to watch it every day after school, and like was just like super obsessed with it. Like bought like tons of like the Alpha Fighter and like all like somebody licensed like a line of like the toys for the U.S. I can't remember who it was, but they came out with a bunch of like really crappy Robotech toys for the U.S. The Japanese stuff was way better.
Yeah.
But I bought all the like American stuff and like, I don't know. So I went like really in depth. I was like really obsessed with like mythology and all the stuff like protoculture and like the Robotech Masters, and like I was way into it. And then the funny thing is like I kind of started to get more into it. And I can't remember why, but like I just went and like on this like buying spree last year and bought like 4 Alpha Fighters, because I was like, hey, I can afford, like, you know, it's funny to say, like, I can afford to spend like $60 on some imported Japanese thing.
It's like, I'm a well-known person on the internet nowadays. I can have
like,
power.
Yeah, I was like, $60 is nothing to me now, you know. So I went and bought, and then like I'm like, why did I do that? You know,
I'm drunk on my own power.
So it was like a good lesson. It was kind of like, you know, I was like, yeah, it's nice to have like all these Alpha Fighters, but now they just like sit in the closet. You know, it's like, what am I going to do with them?
Always make a diorama.
Yeah, I know. So they're nice to have, and like, you know, I actually did go and you know, get all the episodes from the show, which I will rewatch at some point when I have time. Maybe if I am in the hospital for an extended period of time, I'll have plenty of time to watch this stuff.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for being the guest for the first audio podcast of the Planet 8 podcast. And look forward to hearing more from GDGT, or Gadget, as it's called.
GDGT, it'll be out soon.
It is a, I personally like the simple design website that is right now.
Well, it'll stay pretty simple, but we have a lot more coming for it, so.
Thanks a lot, man.
No, thank you very much.